11th of March 2011, the northeast coast of Japan was hit by a 10-meter-high tsunami that destroyed entire towns and killed tens of thousands of people. The tsunami also flooded the Fukushima 1 nuclear power plant, knocking out emergency generators needed to run cooling systems that controls the reactors. This resulted in a partial core meltdown in reactors 1, 2 and 3, hydrogen explosions and the venting of nuclear contaminated steam. Fears of radiation leaks led to a 20-kilometer radius evacuation around the plant. While this podcast was produced, the nuclear emergency at the Fukushima plant was still ongoing and is now classified as a more serious incident than the Three Mile Island accident in the United States in 1979. Three Mile Island was the only serious accident in the history of nuclear energy generation in the United States, but it was enough to stop the construction of any new nuclear power plants in the United States for more than 35 years. Chernobyl did much the same in Europe. But with the memories of Chernobyl and Three Mile Island fading, and the seriousness of global warming becoming clearer, nuclear energy was back on the agenda in the first decade of the 21st century. It has been proposed as a partial solution to reduce the release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Perhaps surprisingly, environmentalists such as climatologist James Hansen and scientist James Lovelock have advocated nuclear energy as one of the ways to avert the looming ecological crisis associated with global warming. Thus, global warming has created a situation where some seek a solution through the use of a technology that the environmental movement struggled against for decades. And by early 2011, it seemed that many new nuclear stations were going to be built around the globe. However, scientific and public perceptions can be influenced by sudden disasters that reveal the potential hidden risks of certain technologies. But there is much more needed than framing nuclear energy in terms of environmental and health issues. In a book entitled From Energy Dreams to Nuclear Nightmares, Lessons for the 21st Century from a Previous Nuclear Era, Horace Herring, a visiting research fellow in the Energy and Environment Research Unit of the Open University in the United Kingdom, argues that opposition to nuclear power has more complex social and economic roots than is often believed. This intriguing book charged the development of the nuclear protest movement with particular reference to Britain. Horace Herring is my guest on today's podcast, and we discuss the long history of the utopian and dystopian dichotomy that has surrounded nuclear technology since its inception in the early 20th century. Today we're exploring nuclear power, and of course it's a very topical thing at the moment because of the ongoing nuclear emergency in Japan. And it's very interesting to me that in the media you see that a few months ago nuclear power was very much seen as a panacea to deal with global warming. And now a lot of people come out of the woodwork and they say it's not a good idea. It seems that nuclear power always has had this utopian and dystopian kind of dichotomy. When did this dichotomy first emerge? Is it quite recent or does it go further back in time?
I think people have always felt ambivalent about technology, you know, maybe right back to the Stone Age. When you invent tools, you can use them for good or for life, but they can also be used as weapons. So it's nuclear as a sort of new technology. People can see the good side, the utopian side, and also the bad side, the bomb side, the dystopian. And basically, since about the late 19th century, since the discovery of radioactivity in X-rays, this has been the nuclear age. And at first, everybody thought radioactivity, X-rays were wonderful and would be a great benefit to mankind. And there was a very strong belief in them, of their benefits. And then Frederick Soddy in 1909 produced his famous book, The Interpretation of Radium. He was a popular science writer and he was about one of the first to mention the dark side of the atom, if you like, that the nuclear age could be a utopian one, or if we use nuclear as a weapon, it could be oblivion. And H.G. Wells, another science writer, was very interested in Soddy's work, and he produced his famous science fiction novel in 1914, The World Set Free. And there you had an atomic age, and Wells was one of the first to introduce the idea of the atomic bomb producing mass destruction, the end of civilization. But he did end his book with a golden nuclear age. So that set in the public's mind the attitude of nuclear as a utopian technology bringing immense benefits, but also as a dark, could be bring back the dark age if not handled well. But basically, radiation had a very good press. It was widely marketed as a health cure, and X-rays were seen as wonderful for medicine, and radioactivity could be a cure for cancer. And this existed right the way up till the time of the first atomic bomb. It was also an age of great belief in science and technology, in the role of government, and in the idea of a planned, centrally planned state. And socialism and communism were seen as very good ideologies, and science and nuclear power would play a great part in this ideal society. So there's always been that ambivalence, but basically nuclear had a very good press. It was well supported, incredibly well supported and promoted by scientists and by politicians, and generally there was very little criticism of it.
Is it also due to the fact that scientists who worked on the atomic bomb wanted to do something after, you know, the destruction, to do something good with the atom?
No, I think they always wanted to do something good with the atom, and that was the age. You know, they always, even before it was technically feasible, they always talked about the golden age of atomic power and how energy would be plentiful, unlimited. And I suppose during the Second World War and the discovery of fission in the late 1930s, which became the atomic reactor, it then became a technical possibility to produce both the bomb and the nuclear reactor. So nuclear scientists were involved in both. And I suppose that's where the dichotomy came. Some scientists producing the bomb were also heavily promoting the nuclear reactor.
So during the 1950s, nuclear power was portrayed in a very positive light. So when did that optimism start to change? When did it give way to more public skepticism?
The crucial thing was the dropping of the first atomic bomb in 1945, and that created immense shock among the public that this utopian technology had been used to great destructive power. And there was a great public debate about the perils of the nuclear age. But this was overcome by the propaganda that from the scientists and the government that nuclear power was possible. And there was a lot of nuclear euphoria in the late 1940s, which slowly gave way as the technology proved problematic and nuclear power didn't come along to produce cheap electricity. And then it all got started again in 1953 with Eisenhower's Atoms for Peace speech at the UN. And then 2 years later, there was the first commercial nuclear reactor at shipping port in the States, and then at Windscale in 56. So by the mid-1950s, nuclear had arrived, and it was heavily promoted by the media, by government, as the golden age of atomic power actually came true. That continued right the way up to the 60s. In fact, nuclear power wasn't controversial in the 60s because it was becoming a commercial mainstream technology as reactors were built. And it was also an age of great faith in scientists and in the government to solve problems. And there was a nationalized electricity industries, and big science, big industry, big government was seen as a solution to society's problems. And it was only really in about the early 1970s, maybe 1973, with the energy crisis and oil shortages, that disillusionment set in with nuclear. this wasn't really a disillusionment with nuclear power itself as a technology, but more disillusionment with big government and big business. And this was the whole age of the new left, the counterculture, and they were questioning what they called the military-industrial complex, of which nuclear was a large part. So it was more a social critique of technology rather than a critique of nuclear. And then there was another undercurrent throughout the 50s of the campaign against the atomic bomb, and in particular about the campaign about fallout and radiation pervading everything, contaminating food. So there was the undercurrent of protest against nuclear, first in the form of the bomb and its nuclear testing, and then only very slowly as against nuclear technology in the form of the reactor. It was more opportunistic protest against the reactor. The reactor came to symbolize all that was bad with society. It was a symbol of big government, of a scientist out of control. It was symbolic of what people stood against. It was a symbol that united all these disparate groups who were opposed to the direction science and society was going.
You mentioned the Windscale nuclear complex in Cumbria in England. In 1957, there was a nuclear accident there. Did that not influence the way that people saw nuclear power in the United Kingdom?
No, not at all. The 57 accident was greatly played down by the government and by the industry. You could say it was hushed up. And there was then still immense belief and confidence in government, in the nuclear industry. So when people were told there was no problem, it was safe, there was no problem, people believed it. And as I said, what changed in the 60s and 70s was people's confidence in the nuclear industry and in scientists themselves. And in the 1960s and 70s, people began to question the role of scientific experts, of expertise. Public opinion started to change. But in fact, if you look at the polls going back decades, they've always been rather constant. There've always been 20% of people who have been in favour of nuclear and 20% who were opposed to it and 20% who didn't know or didn't care, leaving the 40% swing voters who were cautious and a bit fearful of it, but were willing to go along with what the government said. So in the 60s, late 70s, that 40%, the swing vote, began to lose faith in government, in the nuclear industry, as they began to suspect the nuclear industry was covering up its problems. And it was really those sort of people sitting on the fence who weren't involved at all in any sort of environmental or nuclear activities who began to slowly lend their support to the anti-nuclear cause.
Yes, is that not reinforced by the Three Mile Island accident in 1979? And later on, of course, with Chernobyl, because it's very clear that no new nuclear reactors were built in the United States after 1979, and the same applies to Europe after Chernobyl. Does that mean that public opinion swung so clearly against nuclear power after these accidents that it could not be discussed?
No. What killed nuclear was economics. They were just too expensive to build. They didn't perform adequately. They were built in an era, or planned in an era, of the late 60s, early 70s, when interest rates were low, electricity demand was rising rapidly. But with the energy crisis in 1973 and throughout the 1970s, electricity demand was static. There wasn't any need for new power stations. In fact, lots of electricity plant was cancelled, oil, coal, and nuclear. So nuclear suffered from the industry economics, from falling, flat electricity demand, high interest rates. So they were just, like many other big capital-intensive projects, cancelled. Obviously, opinion, the media, obviously doesn't make building them easier, but it wasn't the reason why there's been no more construction of nuclear things. It was just throughout the 90s and 80s and 90s, it's just been uneconomic to build them. And then they discovered gas, and gas-powered stations were far cheaper to build. So nuclear's got a bad press, if you like. It's not popular. But if governments want to build them, as they do in France, in China, they build them. And it's interesting that the countries that have built them in the last 20 years, they all have nationalized electricity industries and have a strong state, maybe able to overcome opposition. But I wouldn't say nuclear opposition has ever really stopped a construction of a nuclear power station. It's been very rare. It's mainly economics.
Do you think that the revival of the enthusiasm of nuclear power in the past 10 years in the Western world has to do with economics and not with what a lot of proponents say to prevent climate change Armageddon? This is the solution to global warming.
In the last 10 years, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the revival of nuclear industry. I mean, you must remember the nuclear industry is still very strong. It's backed by very powerful electrical firms, backed by government. But there's been a lot of talk, but very little building. Nuclear hasn't been able to get over its bad economics, its long construction time, its uncertain performance. And there's only about one or two under construction in Europe, and there's one under construction in Finland, and this is way, way over budget and miles behind, years behind in its construction date. So there are immensely complex, very capital intensive projects, and like all these sorts of projects, they're very difficult to get them to work properly and on budget. There's a section of society who have a vested interest in nuclear because it brings immense capital, investment and orders. But basically, there has been no construction because there are much better alternatives. And the best alternative at the moment is gas and then maybe wind energy. So these don't have the economic problems of nuclear. So although you still have the maybe the rump nuclear industry left, particularly in countries like France or China, who want to build nuclear, there isn't the economic support. So if you want to have nuclear at the moment, it has to be heavily subsidized, which can only be done by governments under a nationalized system. People, well, they're indifferent to nuclear at the moment. It's hard to get worked up about an idea. And since there are no nuclear power stations being built, people aren't opposed to them. You know, but once most probably they were being built, then you could get the rebirth of a nuclear movement. You can't have a new anti-nuclear movement if there's nothing to campaign against. You need something concrete, something being built, and then people can go there and demonstrate against it. So this is why nuclear has fallen off the sort of environmental agenda, really, because nothing's happening.
So do you think that the ongoing nuclear emergency in Japan is even more derailing the ideas of building new nuclear power? In a way, you can say that the utopian vision of nuclear power saving the planet is falling off the cliff with the emergency that's ongoing at the moment.
Well, the emergency is a great setback for the utility involved, Tokyo Electric. It's a big economic catastrophe for them. And obviously, it's a lot of bad publicity. So it's not helpful for nuclear. It will make the demand for more expensive safety measures. So it's unhelpful for nuclear, but it won't stop nuclear power being built in countries such as France or China or Korea for want to build them. Though I don't think until there is a big revival of nuclear power, until nuclear power stations are actually being proposed and planned, you're not going to get another grassroots movement against nuclear power. At the moment, nuclear power is a phantom. You know, it's talked about, but nothing happens. And as I said, you can't have a movement against a ghost, if you like. So the problems with nuclear now are no worse than they were 50 years ago. The technology and its risks haven't really changed. But what's changed is our attitude. We no longer have faith in these large-scale technological projects run by elite scientists and by big government. Now we are more questioning of authority and expertise. And I think you'll find that in Japan, people will start to question, you know, the nuclear scientists, the role of nuclear regulators, the role of government, and say, were they being truthful with us? You know, should we have trusted their judgment, their expertise? So it's that questioning of expertise, of science, that's really harmful to nuclear power, which is a very complex technology with sort of unseen risks, particularly radiation. And radiation is a very complex issue to deal with because it's so invisible, and that there you often have to trust scientists and regulators, and you have to take their word that something is safe. If people lose confidence in those experts, then they're going to say, no, we don't believe you, we'd rather not have it. So the technology, the risks, the benefits haven't really changed, but people's attitudes to the people making those judgments have changed. So we also have this sort of cultural change away from big government, from utopian societies, from big projects, more towards small scale, decentralized and short term projects. People want to have more control over their lives. People want to be able to choose the risks that they take and the benefits they get. And with nuclear, it's something very long term, very uncertain, very expensive. And so people would rather not take that risk. They'd rather say, we'll have something small scale like wind or solar. You know, it may not be as effective, but it's, at least it's under our control and we can make the decisions.
So it will be very interesting to see how everything at the moment plays out and what impact it will have on future projects. Is there anything you'd like to add to the conversation?
Just that nuclear has always been a utopian technology. In fact, all energy sources are utopian technologies. Every time there's a new one, coal, oil, electricity, everybody has said this new technology is going to revolutionize our lives, are going to change society, they're going to be wonderful things. And then everybody sort of eagerly sort of jumps on that bandwagon and says, yes, this new technology is marvelous. And then it fails to deliver, and then they get disillusioned and they start attacking it. So it's this whole history of technological optimism, which often then after a few decades goes to pessimism. So nuclear's been no different. And I think we find the same with solar energy. You know, it's been heavily promoted as a utopian technology that will revolution our lives, bring about a wonderful, small, decentralized society. And when it fails to do this, fails to deliver the benefits, then people will start to criticize it, particularly criticize the institutions connected with it who've hyped it up. And then they go on and move, look for a new technology. So in a few decades, maybe we'll be disillusioned with wind power, solar power. It hasn't produced what it said. And then suddenly we'll come along and say, fusion power is the answer, you know, it's wonderful. And so the cycle will go on of optimism, disillusionment, pessimism, and going on to a new technology.
Technology and science are not developing in a vacuum. It develops in a social context. Well, thank you for joining me, Horace.
My pleasure, yes.
For those who want to further explore the Fukushima nuclear emergency in a historical perspective, the journal Nature has published an interesting editorial on the emergency entitled Lessons from the Past. It was published on the 31st of March in Nature, volume 471, on page 547. The same volume also contains an article reporting on the cleanup efforts around Chernobyl nuclear power plant 25 years after the nuclear disaster, and how health studies of the impact of this accident are faltering. The article asks if there are lessons from Chernobyl for Japan. Both articles can be accessed online at www.nature.com. And that is all that we have time for on this episode. If you have any comments relating to this or any of the other podcast episodes, please email me at resources@eh-resources.org or use the contact form on the Environmental History Resources website. This is Jan Oosthoek, temporarily from Canberra in Australia.